Welcome to the Ambitious Sloth Podcast. I'm Julian, and I interview people from all around the world about their mindsets, ambitions, and meaning in life for you so you can learn from them or just get a different perspective on things you haven't thought of before. Today's guest is Nanda Knobben. He's an entrepreneur and helps people to become self-sufficient by, for example, providing solar energy, water filtration, and composting toilets. The topics we talked about today were also, yes, entrepreneurship, and also holistic minimalism, routines, and social media's usage or addiction, and how to cope with that and mitigate it maybe. Also, later on, we went into the meaning of life and what he wants to contribute with his life right now to the current circumstances and not wait for his legacy to be the impact. With that being said, let's get right into the episode.
A lot of people, I think, in this period of time have trouble making a commitment at all. Mm-hmm. So
I feel that, yes, yeah. I do have that too. So that might be also one of my weaknesses, that I still like really explore a lot of fields and don't focus really on one particular thing. But mm-hmm. I guess that's the learning process continues, and I will figure it out. But yeah, also, for example, fear that with a podcast, for example, the first year was super focused on like really entrepreneurship, business, how to get new tips and techniques to develop. And now now I changed in the past couple of months and was more focused in, okay, let's just discuss real cool topics about life. What is like a meaningful life? How can we see what's really important? What different perspectives you have in comparison to me, and how can we connect and combine those things together so that we have for ourselves a really solid and coherent world image or perspective, basically.
Yeah, but I don't think you should be that hard on yourself, because you said the first year was on business, but you are still recording a podcast. You know, you're still doing, you did last year, you're doing this year, you're still recording with people. So you're still making a commitment to podcast. And I think a lot of people that are interested in business are also interested in self-development. So just what I said previously, you're just widening the topic a little bit. But I think they're very closely related. So I think any entrepreneur that is serious about their business is also serious about, you know, self-development.
Yeah. Well, for me, it seems that it is a difference. But of course, yeah, it's just indeed, like with the podcast, I'm pretty consistent, but also because I just feel it's just I really enjoy this process of interviewing people, like getting different perspectives, seeing where I maybe cling on my own perspectives, where I'm not open to anything new, where am I open to something new, and just like change my perspectives along the way, and just also meet amazing, interesting people. So that's I really enjoy that.
You shouldn't also underestimate, you know, the personal connection people have to you. You're the podcast guy, and your interests are business, but your interests are also personal development and helping people, you know. Like one of the guys that got me into listening podcasts in the first place was, you know, Tim Ferriss. I'm sure you know him. But you know, I listen to his business podcast, but I also listen to his health podcast. All the food doctors that come into his podcast, I also listen to that, you know. So we people can have a lot of interest. And yeah, maybe the people, did they also just listen to the podcast, or they take from the podcast what they think is interesting. And I don't think you should, you know. If you focus too much on one thing, I think people can surprise you. That's just what I wanted to say.
Surprise me in the way that how
how wide their interests are, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And how interested they are in your interest as a person, you know, and your enthusiasm about these topics. And then they say, oh, he's interested in business, but he's also interested in personal development. And then they listen to a podcast view of the personal development and say, oh, he's got a solid point here, you know. And then it get taken down the rabbit hole, and then yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, I actually didn't really think about that. Interesting. Yeah. See, those kind of tweaks in my perspectives, I really like that, to get like a new, like, hint of, like, you could also think that way. But also,
yeah, because I think the first time I heard about the ketogenic diet, it was on a Tim Ferriss podcast, and I listened to it because I liked this. You know, I read the 4-Hour Workweek, thought one of the best books I read, and were also one of the first books I read about online marketing. I really loved it. I started listening to his podcast. A health podcast came across, and it was about ketogenic diet. And you know, I also started trying to experiment with my food and my diet, and how that influenced my mental health and also physiologically. So yeah. It opened a whole new world for me. And I think because I was interested in Tim Ferriss as a person his recommendation made me broaden my horizon.
Yeah, I think also, I'm not sure where I heard it the first time, but I was also following a couple of people because of like, productivity, self-improvement, and then some point people also came across and started talking about the minimalism stuff, and they're like, that sounds somewhat interesting. And it's like, it's I think they started with like a bit of a detox, social media detox, and then going into like a minimalist direction, and I was like, that sounds interesting. And so I actually also went, just by listening to one sort, found my interest in minimalism as well. Like, okay, let's dig deeper into that, just because I listened to other people. And you also said you were quite intrigued with that as well, right? Weren't you?
Yeah, definitely. I've been following the minimalist movement for a few years. And, you know, I think it started for me with, you know, the documentary on Netflix, The Minimalist, a few years ago. And it just got me thinking, and I was already a person that the last few years I said more no, how do I frame this correctly, like a few years ago exactly, I was like I came across to myself and the study and my own business, and I got a little bit of, you know, like burnt out, and I didn't have enough energy, but I wanted to do everything, you know. I wanted to do clubbing with my friends. I wanted to go good in school, but I also wanted to do good on my internship, and I wanted to do everything. And, minimalistic living isn't not for me only about the material stuff, but maybe even more for the mental stuff, and saying no to things and declining offers. So, you know, I cut back on the social activities. I cut back on I went to my, you know, my internship, and I talked about like, I think the workload is a little bit too much. How can we handle this? Because, you know, I'm a bit burnt out. So, and I think the key to being minimalistic in a mental is also being conscious about the things you really enjoy, like how many social activities you do and how many of those social activities you actually enjoy, like maybe you go to dinner with somebody every week and you enjoyed the dinners the first few months, but after a few months they kind of became a routine, and now you actually want to do different stuff on Thursday night, but you know, you still have these meetings. So things then can start as something fun, initially can become, you know, a little draining. And I think with the minimalistic mindset, you just have to get to a higher level of consciousness. So you're more aware of the things that drain your energy and the things that give you energy.
So basically also like staying a bit more true to yourself when those things come up, you're not just like, yeah, but it already before said yes to this person or something, but you also actually like realize, as you said, you're self-aware and you feel, okay, that's not something I enjoy anymore. And then even going over the burden of telling the other person, I don't enjoy this anymore, and having really the integrity for yourself to say this to other people and being really clear about your communication, what you enjoy and what you don't. I feel that also really is in there. But you also mentioned that, oh no, I forgot it. Damn it. You mentioned, oh, the self-awareness. You just need to get in a higher level of consciousness. And the word just sounds so easy to do, but I know it's not.
It's definitely not. But you know, like, but also like habits are extremely powerful. You know, you even got a book about it. The habits of. When you get into, you know, habits and you get into a routine is extremely powerful. So, and a routine is extremely powerful to do good stuff. So if you go, like, you go to the fitness every day and you work out, that's, you know, for a lot of people, that's a good thing. You get into a routine, and the first few times you do on willpower, and after that you develop a routine and you just keep going and going and going. And then after a few months, you don't even think about it. Every day you go to the gym. That's just what you do, and that's just the habit and the routine you developed. But I think a lot of times the human brain, I think I read this also in the book we talked about the last time, Sapiens, we are programmed to develop routines. So our body wants to, do things on the automatic pilot.
Save energy,
save energy. So a lot of times you unconsciously develop routines that aren't actually helping you. And to be, you know, we can call it a higher level of consciousness, but to just be aware of the routines you developed, I think is a really important first step.
And well, if you basically a bit new to this topic and don't really know, okay, how to really get into the process of even like experiencing those habits, how do you figure out how do you feel the higher level of consciousness? How do you do this, for example? Because I needed to meditate many hours to get there at some point, but maybe there's something else. What do you do?
Yeah, you can meditate, definitely, but you can also, you know, approach it very practically. You just take a pen, take a paper, and just write everything you do, even the small things from the day, the moment you start your day. So you wake up, you make breakfast, you brush your teeth, you go to work. And then you take all the tasks at work, and then you do all the tasks in the evening. And you can do this for a day, you can do this for a week. And then just look at the page and look at the things you enjoy doing and look at the things you don't enjoy doing. And I think, I think we people, to develop ourselves, we also need a lot of time in a week, we need time in a week. You know, when there isn't anything scheduled, or you should schedule your free time. That's even more important.
Yeah.
You know, for that's thinking time. I also, in my workday, I have like I try to do every hour. I just try to be 1 hour in my office, and it doesn't. I don't have this hour every day, but I will. I try to do it at least 3 hours a week, where just in my office and just with a blank, you know, notepad, and I don't have to write anything down. But if I just sit there and I just let my mind go, yeah, I always end up writing things down. So I think having this free time planned is also important, you know, for the mental health, and not having appointments to appointments to appointments, you know.
What is usually the theme or the topic you write about? Because for me, I have this time. It's not like an hour or something scheduled, but rather every evening I write something down, like something in the journal, to like whatever happened important during the day, what I want to write down, or whether I need to clarify something, or whether I need to get something out of my head, or it could be anything. What is it? Mm-hmm. What is that for you? And why do you think it's important as well?
Yeah, I think for me it also could be anything. It could be like the grocery list, but also, you know, some new perspective about my business. So I think last week I went to a marketing event here in the Netherlands, the EMU Live marketing event, and I was there for 3 days. And I also slept there in the hotel, so I didn't go home to, you know, my girlfriend and our daughter. And just being there alone in the evening in my hotel, it just, you're not working on the business, you're not, but you are learning new things, new techniques. So you have time to process that information. And what I write down, you take a look at your business and you think, where can we improve? What can we do? That's fair on a business skill, personal level. Yeah, I also write things down about, you know, how can I improve my work-life balance? So what can we do to do that? And for me, currently, I need to structureize things better, you know, how can I improve my agenda? That's some challenges for me. I'm currently struggling a little bit. So how can I improve that? So it's just being aware of the things I need to improve, and setting things up to help me improve that. I think that's important.
Yeah, and like to be honest, I like those pure thinking parts. I enjoy a lot more, like in the last couple of weeks. And at some point, sometimes really just I'm sitting from my laptop or my phone and just don't do anything productive or anything useful for a while. And then I just turn it off and sit down and meditate for, I don't know, like half an hour or an hour to just free my mind again from all the distractions and whatever, everything I did before. And this is so satisfying and useful to like do that, and then your mind is suddenly so clear again after.
So you're meditating for 1 to 2 hours. You meditate for 1 to 2 hours on end.
2 hours most of the time, not, but like 1 hour definitely. Yeah, 1 hour. I try to do like it every day.
And do you like have a special technique you use for meditating?
So usually, because I did the Vipassana 10 days meditation in Nepal in this January, I most of the time, do that. So basically it is, bluntly speaking, just a body scan where you really intensely focus on every single part of your body, super intensely feel what is there. And at some point it really becomes so intense that you can at any given point in time feel something at any given point on your body. So that's really interesting. And sometimes I include in the whole meditation process also some gratitude, some like going over my values, like what is the most important, and also setting up like of low of energy that you would like to spread to other people, for example, a bit of compassion, to get you into the mood of like helping other, getting to the mood of like when you meet another person, you're spreading this spark of positive energy to other people. That's usually what's included. Yeah.
And were you already meditating before you went to Nepal, or did you learn it? Do you know the importance of meditating in Nepal?
No, before, to be honest, it was part of. I didn't really do it like regularly, but I did do it for quite some time, for I think a year or something. But there was most of the time because of the process of like getting more productive and freeing up your mind and getting more things done than afterwards. So basically the I would say the entrepreneurship perspective of why should you meditate, because you're more productive, you can do more things. That was my perspective beforehand.
But not everybody goes, you know, to Nepal to do exactly. a 10-day training, you know, on meditating. So why did you do it?
Somewhere in September, I think, before I went to Hong Kong, it was that I had like the feeling that I just left the other job and then had the feeling, okay, I don't really know what to do next. And I was like, okay, I need to like have 10, 15, 20 days off of social media to like get my perspective in and not just what anything else anybody else is telling me in some direction, really figure out, okay, what are my desires? Where do I want to go? What do I really enjoy doing? And so I searched for that online. It's like, okay, where can I meditate for a certain amount of time, or where can I just like social media detox and to change also the environment, because I feel that's really important, because otherwise you just fall into the habits of what you built before. And then that's this thing, Vipassana, just popped up somewhere on the internet. And then additionally, there was like, and it's for free and you can just donate the money if you want to. And it was me as a student was like, I'm doing it. But yeah, that was basically, to be honest, the thinking process I went through. Like, okay, I need something to direct myself, get the compass needle again to north and figure something out for myself. And then this came, I would now, like back then I probably had said luck, but maybe it was just meant that I find this and do that.
Yeah. I think it's really special what you've done. You know, you were in Groningen, or I don't know where you lived at the time.
Enschede,
but you became aware, you know, I needed change. I needed to, you know, refocus, get away from social media. And that's the first step, you know, we just talked about it from being aware you need something. But then I think that's always, for most people, I think is the hard part is also, you know, knowing you need it, but then also doing it, you know? So a lot of people are aware, you know, from, my work by life balance isn't optimal, or my relationship isn't going as well, or my company is going well. But actually trying to change something, I think that's most people find the hardest.
It definitely is.
And
I got really lucky that I was going to Hong Kong for my study abroad to have a complete shift in my location and environment. So I was just, you didn't then have first of the time, but also secondly, you are already in a movement, and then it's easier to go somewhere else and go a different direction rather than when you just start moving. Definitely that is like really hard part.
And I also really like what you said about, you know, that you also need to change your environment, and otherwise you fall into back, you know, the old habits, the old routines. And I was just wondering but you are still doing it now. You say you still meditate on a daily basis, but do you think 10 days is enough, you know, to change the habit?
To do that course, you mean?
No, you do it in the course
Yeah.
for 10 days, but to keep doing it afterwards. Do you think 10 days of, you know, and changing your environment and a change in habits, is 10 days doing it consistently in another environment, is it enough for lasting change?
To be honest, this, especially this Vipassana course, was not just like 10 days of a bit meditating of like an hour or something per day. So there was literally like 10 hours a day of meditating. And and like 10 hours of just seated meditation. So at some point also like you go through a lot of pain when doing that, and you go really deep into your own psyche, and you experience things you haven't experienced before.
Could you talk to other people?
No,
or was it like a
complete silence? Yeah.
For the entire day.
For 10 days, yeah.
For 10 days.
No talking, not a single word, not even like eye contact, no hand signs, no nothing.
Yeah.
So you were literally for 10 days just by yourself.
That's really intense.
Indeed. If you
could everybody handle it, or were there all people, you know, who fell off the wagon? Or
there were also, I don't know, because they didn't talk to me, but about like that, as I would guess, probably 10 to 20 people left out of the like group of 100 and something people or something. Yeah.
But 10 days, no talking.
Yeah. To be honest, in the end, I didn't want to start talking again, because it was so comforting to not have all the input from the outside. Even just talking to other people was a lot of mental effort and draining. And
really?
Yeah. I really needed time to slowly get into talking to people again and getting all the information suddenly in. And I also like the 4 or 5 days after the course was done, I didn't look at my phone, because that was again way too much information suddenly.
Yeah. I think it's really hardcore what you've done. I sometimes see those silent weekends, you know, in the Netherlands. You go to a place and you're silent for a weekend, and I'm really interested in these, but I think to do it 10 days straight out of the box, I think it's really cool that you did it. And I can imagine it really gave you some insights.
It definitely does. And I'm like, I would still say this is probably one of the events that changed my life the most so far.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still like the things that I experienced and learned there, they're still like slowly manifesting right now in my life. Like I'm still learning from that experience from those 10 days. Yeah.
So what is your current relationship, you know, with your phone?
It's again, super, well, no, I cannot say bad, because, it is, I'm using it quite a bit, but I'm like every single time, I'm super aware of that. I'm super aware of like, okay, I'm again impulsively checking it. I'm again doing that, and I feel, okay, this is like, I feel my reaction on it. Mm-hmm. So that has improved a lot. I had like faces in which I again completely stopped it. I had faces in which I was completely onto it again. So it's like still changing quite a lot. But I do have designated faces now apart from it. So I have at least like 1 hour a day in which I just focus on me, myself, during the meditation, and really focus on things that I want to develop in myself or want to be. But I still have, like, it's still going on with my kind of small fight with the social media. But when I need it, when I need to have a break, I can like completely stop it, and okay, now I need to think. Now I need to have time and stop it. And now I'm super fast to just switch off all the devices I have and just meditate. That becomes super easy now. So that definitely improved. But I'm still like impulsively checking whether I get a new message or I don't know.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. So yeah.
How's that for you?
I think. The I think it's always, you know, it also what we came, we talked about a little earlier. I think it's really closely related for me with the work-life balance. So when I'm at the office, my phone just lies there and I don't use it. I don't Instagram. I don't Facebook. I'm not even interested in those. But
do you have them?
I have them, but I check them sometimes, mostly in the morning while I'm doing breakfast. And then I don't feel the urge. It's just like, currently I don't have breakfast because I'm doing the 16-8 fast schedule diet.
Yeah.
So, but sometimes I check it when I'm just waking up, you know, I'm just crawling a little in bed. So yeah, there are still things to improve, and you know. But I'm pretty fine with doing that just for 5 minutes while I'm in bed, just checking up my Instagram messages, checking up my Facebook messages. And I'm not worried that it distracts me or something, because when I wake up, I get in the shower and I don't look at my phone again. Mostly when I get home, I'll check it out again. So yeah, of course, one of the big tips I have for other entrepreneurs is also have a work phone. I think this helped me improve. And I even did it for a time that I would only have, you know, Facebook and Instagram on my work phone. So when I needed to upload something for my business, you know, a new social media post or something else, I just do it on my work phone. But I didn't have it with me in the evening, so I wouldn't be bothered, you know. So I think the biggest challenge for me, because I think in the weekdays I feel like I have a great connection with my phone, you know. I just only use it for messaging or calling and don't get distracted, like, oh, I have a message. Sometimes it just lays on my desk for a few hours and then like, oh, I had a new few messages, and then I'll check it out. But you know, I'm also behind the computer, so when I get an email, I'll see it on my computer, so there's no need to take my desk. I have a few rules. When I get into the workplace, the first few hours, mostly I do emails for the first hour. From I start at 9, I do emails to 10, and then from 10 till 1, these are mainly my focus hours, you know, where I do the deep work, I do the writing, and I don't touch my phone at all. And in the afternoon, I allow myself to be, you know, a little bit more responsive, you know, to emails, to if employees come to me and ask me for, what do you think about my blog post? What do you think about the social media post we scheduled? You know, I just go with the flow of the day. And I think it's really great that I did my focus hours in the morning, because that these also give you, you know, a feeling of how do you describe the feeling, but it just
of
feels
accomplishment that, once you're
yeah, that was the word I'm looking for, that you already I wanted to do this today, and that you already did it. And then, you know, because before I did the focus hours in the morning, I sometimes came home after work and I was like, oh, I wanted to do that, but I didn't do it. And because all the things were coming at me. So just blocking myself the first few hours, and then, you know, being more responsive in the afternoon just allows me to finish up all loose ends. But also, you know, by making time on a daily basis for the things you want to work on, it really improved you know, my happiness on the job. And the struggle for me is with the phone, I think, is mostly in the weekends when there isn't a clear schedule. Sometimes I wake up on a Saturday and like, yeah, we are going to, you know, do something with the family in the afternoon, and then we are going to, you know, do groceries in the morning, and then, you know, I notice I'm checking my phone more. Mm-hmm. But I think from Monday to Friday, I'm fine, and the weekend still needs some improvements.
But would you then say that the phone is the problem, or is the problem us ourselves that we just like feel triggered by those things, and it's not the phone itself that is like the part of the important, but rather the habit we got into in doing so. Like it's so ourselves.
Yeah, it's definitely not the phone. I think for me, it's I really like what I'm doing. I love my business a lot, and I'm really, you know, deep into that. And I think it's just hard in the weekend, you know, to the switching off process, you know, because if it was for me, I'd probably go in the office on Saturday morning, and I would go on Sunday morning, and I would do something with the family on Sunday and Saturday afternoon. I think, yeah, you know. So that would be the amazing things for me. I'm actually thinking about doing that, you know, from taking a weekday, like the Wednesday, and do Wednesday afternoon, do something with, you know, with my daughter and the family. We are actually doing that tomorrow. So I'm
nice.
We are going out, and then in the weekday, just do some work on the mornings and do the fun stuff on the afternoon. So yeah, you're an entrepreneur. You can schedule your own hours. And I'm just trying to see what works for me, but also what makes my family happy. So I think they deserve to have Ananda that's has their full, you know, that isn't somewhere else in his mind, you know. When I'm with my daughter and when I'm with my girlfriend, I want to give them, you know, the full me, and to be there mentally.
Giving basically that your full attention to everything you're doing. Yeah. I feel that is most of the time diminished by if you're looking on your phone even if it's just like next to you, or you just get a message, or now even right now, perfect timing for getting a call.
yeah.
that you are not 100% focused on the moment, what you want to focus on. And I feel that, to be honest, that is when you like split your attention to like two things at the same time, you cannot enjoy one time fully. And it feels like that you are, once you're not super present, you cannot enjoy the good parts of it as well, as good as if you're not. So it's actually diminishing the joy you have in your life. At least it feels for me when you're like not 100% focused on what you want to do.
Yeah, I can really relate to that. And I've also, especially with, you know, for me, especially the family time, you know, when you're having dinner together and you see you get a few messages, and then sometimes I check them under the table, and I'm so self-aware, and I think, oh no, I shouldn't be doing this. And then most of the days I don't, but you know, it's a constant, I won't say battle, but I think it's really important to don't let that habit get the best of you, and just be aware that you want to be there, you know, in full.
Yeah. And also a thing I did recently was, okay, to really write down and define what person do I want to be, like what aspects of a person do I want to entail in myself. And so basically also parts of like, okay, what are my values? What do I want to focus on? And to be honest, with that in mind, it is a lot easier to get away from those small things, because usually your brain is arguing, yeah, it's just like this one message. It's just like, just quickly look at it. But if this is basically already going against your values and you're aware of that, it's way easier to just say, no, this goes against my values. So you have a better...
It's really good that you write it down. So now you're aware of your values. You have them on paper, you know? So, I think that's... And it's, sometimes it's really hard to come on the spot with, yo, what are my values? If you have to think about that, that's an extra step, you know? Like we talked about before, I did a social studies before this. And we all... therapy.
So we had to do that, with a
cognitive behavior therapy.
Mm-hmm,
yep. We have to do that, and we with each other. And sometimes you have to write, you know, positive thoughts in somebody, you know, with panic attacks, and they come to like the supermarket and they're afraid of that. And it's really hard when you in the moment to think the positive thoughts. But if you write the positive thoughts down beforehand, like I'm okay, I'm mentally fine, I'm physically fine, or I'm not mentally, but I'm physically fine, or my heart can't explode, I just got it tested last week, you know, something like that. Just these positive affirmations, you don't think about them, you know, when you check your phone. But if you write down your values, then you'll remember because you've written them down.
Yeah, I think that's actually a huge part to, like, whatever is really important to you, write it down. Because
Yeah, strategy, plan, etc. Yeah. And I think it's also important, you know, to say that it is you write it down and you're aware, but it will still be hard from time to time, you know? So I think it's a constant process. It is never going to be easy. Or maybe it is from time to time, but there always will come challenging times when you want to look at your phone, you know, these designs, like the phone, you know, like Facebook, etc. They are designed to grab our focus and to keep us in us. So it's a battle. I think I heard a quote about Netflix the other day, and it was a quote from, I think it was one of the founders of Netflix, and he was saying, our competitors aren't like Disney or other streaming services. Our biggest competition is sleep. It was a pretty I read that quote and I was like, oh, this, yeah, I totally understand that one.
Yeah. Damn. I mean, most of those companies are not there to provide you the best value or to give you what you actually want, but rather to really keep you hooked, because that's how they earn their money.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, I'm also, from a business perspective, I'm really big on the neuromarketing thing. Like, you know, when you go to booking.com and then you have all those, so many rooms left, or so many time, or so many people are watching this right now. So from a business perspective, I really, really, you know, get enthusiastic when I see these little tweaks on a website. But, you know, from a mental health perspective, it sometimes also kind of worries me.
It really does, because that is just, I mean, those messages are playing with those deep fears you have inside,
yeah,
like with the fear of course, like missing out, of not getting something there, of not being able to do it in time, and maybe not even doing holidays or whatever, like those real fears they're playing with. And this is like a huge, of course it works, because otherwise they wouldn't do it, but also it is just like so deeply ingrained that we, even when you see it and realize it, once you're in the situation and want to book it yourself, you're like, you still feel the pressure to, yeah, but I need to do it fast, yeah, or no. Even though, yeah, you know it still triggers you because it's so deep inside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're like for booking.com, I think it's one of the best examples for that one, because they really, you know, push the fear game, for the FOMO.
Yeah. I mean, that's how they make money. It's really important to keep that in mind, that most of the companies or platforms or apps or whatever they're just not there most of the time to give you the best value, but really to make you buy or make you stay on the website, because,
yeah,
most of the time it's like the attention that they want for Facebook, Instagram to sell their ads. That's what they want to do.
Mm,
and so
yeah,
that's,
I think,
all their algorithms are pointed toward this direction.
Yeah, I think a lot of these companies are founded with, you know, with the best intentions. And, you know, like Facebook help to connect each other. But they're also, you know, like Facebook became so big. And you can ask yourself, did we get more social interactive because of Facebook, or did we just become less socially interactive, you know? Because I was wondering how my friend is doing, you know, and I haven't heard from him in 2 months, so maybe I'll give him a call. But if you see an update from him every week on Facebook, yeah, then you know how he's doing. So you're not going to call because, yeah, you already know that. But your friend, you know, he doesn't know that from you, you know. So he stops calling. So, yeah, I think I don't know if it really makes us, you know, it's all, I'm also not against it or for saying this. I think, you know, we develop as people and, you know, so change is, there's always change, you know, everything's changing always. And we're always striving for a more optimal, an optimal environment. So
that's actually one of the things I learned during the Vipassana. Everything is changing. That was like one of the core principles, like the impermanence of things.
Yeah.
Especially you learn it when there's pain and you just have to keep sitting, and then you see how it's changing. Actually, at some point, the pain was like you didn't focus on that it hurts, but you focus on, okay, how does it actually feel like? Is it like pulsating? Is it really stinging pain? Is it moving the position? Or like you focus on those things and see, okay, the pain's actually not constant. It's like moving, it's getting harder, it's getting stronger.
But this was a physical pain, you know,
yeah.
from sitting in the chair for that long.
Yeah.
Okay. So your knees were hurting or your hips?
Yeah.
And you were like, I'm not gonna sit a little different. I'm like,
no.
So that was part of the process.
Yes.
Just to focus on the pain.
Yes.
Yeah.
And to realize that it is changing everything.
Mm-hmm.
That was like one of the learnings you got through that. And that was super vivid, because after a while and you kept sitting in this pain, it actually started to move. And sometimes your thoughts went off and you forgot about the pain. So it was not there anymore for you. So that was also interesting. That is like, it is really our perception, our awareness. We create this pain ourselves in a way. It sounds really weird, but to a certain extent, we do. We do think that we have this pain, and then it gets more intense because we think it is there. And then we think, okay, it must be stronger over time, right? So we really focus and make it more intense and more. And then at some point, when you start thinking, okay, about something different, then it suddenly it diminishes, almost gone, because you don't focus on it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that principle got really ingrained in my head, that everything is changing. Like for example, whenever I now get under a cold shower, it's like I go under that, and it's like, okay, how does it feel? And you also see, like, okay, it's changing. How is my body reacting to that?
Yeah.
My breathing gets super fast and my skin is reacting. I get goosebumps and stuff like that is happening. But you feel, okay, but it's changing. And that's interesting.
You are doing the Wim Hof shower, the cold shower?
Well, no, I just do like, I don't know, like 20, 30 seconds in the beginning and the end of each shower.
Okay, nice. Yeah, I think what you say about, you know, the pain and the mentally, I can kind of relate. It's a little different, but because I'm like fasting now for 6 weeks and I do the intermediate fasting thing. So I eat between 1 p.m. and 8 p.m. So that's my eating window. And then I'm not eating until the next day, 1 a.m. And 12 p.m. But yeah, today it's going to be 1 p.m. but normally 12 p.m. But sometimes you feel like, especially the first 3 weeks, you're a little hungry in the morning, and then you're like, oh yeah, I feel the hunger, and then you drink a bit of water, and then sometimes, you know, it already disappears. But sometimes it's just, yeah. But if you focus, you know, you go to your work, you go, you just go to do, you know, the normal things you do on a working day, and then you're completely not thinking about the hunger anymore, and then it's totally gone, and then you're, and then it's like 12 a.m. or it's, yeah, 12 o'clock, and then you're like, oh yeah, I was kind of hungry, I can eat now, you know, but it's no problem at all. So it really helps you, you know, to also focus intentionally on other things and to get your mind off other things. So
yeah.
I think the mind in that case is really powerful, you know, to help you deal with pain, hunger, all the things. And I think we people can do a lot more than we think.
Exactly to that part. The last couple of days, I was again watching and listening to David Goggins. Have you heard of him?
Yeah, I'm really bad with the names, but David Goggins.
The Navy SEAL who went through like a couple of hell weeks and ultra marathons, and it's just an insane dude when it comes to all things of physical pain going through.
Oh yeah, I just I took a look right now. And I've seen him on some other friends of mine who reposted a few things of him, of him. But I don't know him personally.
Yeah. So well, especially in this context of like going through pain and seeing then what your actual potential is with your body, then he's really the guy who will, like, literally, I think he, I just heard it yesterday on the Joe Rogan podcast where they were talking that he ran 8 ultra marathons on consecutive weekends. So 8 weekends in a row, he ran 100 kilometers.
That's an ultra marathon.
100 kilometers, like one of this, yeah. She's like running 100 kilometers on a weekend, then the next weekend, the same thing, the next weekend, the same thing. And usually you're knocked out for like a couple of weeks or maybe months after ultra marathon. He ran it consecutively. Yeah,
I think that's amazing. I'm definitely going to check out the Joe Rogan podcast with him. I'm really curious. But I'm also a little skeptical maybe, and I really would like to see, you know, his hormone balance, if it balances out in the week, because I think doing some ultra marathon, maybe I'm not aware of his fit level, but I really think that will deplete, you know, all your reserves and hormone balances, and I think it really gives you a kicker. But you know, I'm open to be to be told otherwise. So
of course, like he trained and fit like as hell. Like he was a Navy SEAL, and then was still doing those, like usually you do like as a Navy SEAL like one hell week or something, where it's I don't know, 7 days of the most tortures you can go through, and like physical pain and diving and droning almost. And he did like I think 2 in a row, and then at some point a third one. It's like just crazy. Really insane. Yeah, and I think just recently he also,
and I think this, I read about these weeks, and they also do like your sleep deprivation, you know, or I think that's one of the most hard things, you know, for mentally, because you know when you don't sleep for a day you feel grumpy, or when you sleep bad, but when you sleep a few days on end you sleep bad, I think that's what, and then also with all the physical challenges, I can't imagine how hard it is to do a hell week, you know?
As he also stated, like most of the things, it is mentally, like the mental part is the hardest of all of those things. Mm-hmm. He even recently ran the Moab, I think that's a 240-mile race in the deserts of Utah. So like almost 400 kilometers he was running.
Running,
yes.
On end.
Like they obviously had like breaks in between of like a couple of hours, like I don't know like how long, it just bit of eating and then continues running.
Yeah.
That was, but he actually didn't finish because he had like the altitude disease running so many ups and downs after 220 miles or something.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there was on Netflix, there was also a documentary about a marathon, and I watched it. I think it's the Berkeley Marathon, and it's all, I'm not sure, but you should definitely check it out. And they do it every year, but not every year somebody finishes it. I don't know how many kilometers it is, but it's really a niche thing. And sometimes one person can finish it, sometimes two, but... You know, sometimes, some years, nobody finishes it. It's just so hard.
How do you spell it? I want to look it up.
Yeah, let me see. Let me just see. I think if you just Google, it's the Barkley Marathon. So it's the and on B-H-R-K. Barkley Marathons.
Okay.
The race that eats its young.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm curious.
Yeah. You should. It's fun to watch. Let me see how many kilometers it is. Marathon. Yeah, 60 miles. So it's 100 kilometers. But it's like a trial run, you know? So it's...
It's not on streets or something.
No. It's a trial run. And then it's also the race is limited to a 60-hour period. So you have to do like 100 kilometers in 60 hours. So some people finish, but they come in too late, you know? And then it doesn't count.
Oh, dang. Okay, that's so intense.
And there's no sleeping, you know? So 60 hours. So you're running for 4 days straight.
Okay, that is really intense.
Yeah.
Well, yes, that's a huge mental challenge, as I guess most of the people went through said it, at least he also did. But yeah, for like any physical or mental challenge, he basically probably tried all of them already. The book, I think it's called Can't Hurt Me.
Okay, yeah, I will check it out.
Yeah,
once I'm finished with Homo Deus.
Oh yeah, that's also a good one. I haven't read it, but Sapiens was already great.
Yeah, I knocked Sapiens out of the park, and I was like, oh, I'm just going straight into the next one. I thought, oh, it's already finished. So currently I'm listening to the new one, the Homo Deus. Yeah, I'm really enjoying this one too.
And we didn't go over any questions I prepared because it was just all... I don't know, just an awesome conversation.
Yeah.
But still, I like one question I really like to ask is the one that basically is if you would die within 6 months, what would change? What would you do differently?
If I were to die 6 months... I don't think I would change a lot. I really like what I'm doing, you know, helping people to live more self-sufficient. You know, that's what I'm doing with my business. So I think I would only try to push that part of the business harder. You know, I would also with the business, I still have like, you know, a survival web shop, and I also have some, you know, affiliate websites I manage. Mm-hmm. So I think I would... I'm currently already focusing and, you know, stopping with a few business things, but I would focus even harder. I would focus on, you know, helping even more people, because, you know, helping people is just what makes me happy. Mm-hmm. And, so on a business perspective, I would definitely focus, And also, you know, for at home, I would just, you know, really try to set things up, just, you know, for my daughter, for my girlfriends, that if I'm gone, they have like, you know, I don't leave them behind with the mess. So, yeah, I don't think it's weird. You know, I'm also, I did the social studies thing. So a lot of the things that make me happy is helping other people. So I think, you know, setting up my family and helping other people through my business is one of the things I would do. And, you know, there are a lot of people in this world that are also, that are big into, you know, the traveling, and I want to see everything. And I enjoy traveling, but I'm also a person that just, you know, like really likes to be at home and be with my family. I think I'm a family man. So, I wouldn't travel to Bali, or I want to go there, but when I have 6 months to live, I'll just like to be with my family, just work on my business, help other people. So, yeah.
And what do you want other people, or just like, yeah, what do you want to have? What impact do you want to have on the world? So what other people remember you for? Mm-hmm. Sorry to steal this question from the impact theory.
Yeah. No, I don't think I'll have to. I'm not really big on the I want to be remembered through my work kind of thing, or I want to be remembered. I'm not big into that. I don't have to be remembered. It's just, you know, like my family can remember me, but after that, if it's gone, you know, of course I want to, with my business, I want to help a lot of people, and I want to bring some positive changes, but it's no ego thing for me. It doesn't have to be attached to my personality or something. So I don't have to be remembered as a person. So, one of the things, one of the quotes, I think it was from the first part of Homo Deus or from the latest part of Sapiens. But what I really enjoy, I think it was Homo Deus. The one quote that really got to me was when he said, like, you know, just imagine if all people lived twice as long. So everybody lives to 80, that would become, you know, 160. So everybody would live twice as long. So, and then think of your boss at work that does everything the old way, you know, the old fashioned guy. And then imagine that he lives, he sticks around for another 80 years. So even in the office space, and he would still, you know, like Putin in Russia, he would stick around for another 80 years as the prime minister, prime minister, or the president. And, you know, everybody would stick around. So in order for progress in the world to happen, people need to die. So that was kind of the bottom line. And I was like, I was one of those persons, you know, that wanted to live like a very long life, and so as long as possible. And when I heard that quote, I was like, yeah, you know, there are a lot of people that need to die for progress to happen. So, it was really a big insight for me.
Yeah, that is a really interesting perspective. I haven't thought of that.
Mm-hmm.
But now also then connected to that is, what is your perspective of the afterlife, or is there a life after the death, or what do you believe there?
Yeah. I don't believe in the afterlife at all. When I talk to people, you know, that believe in the afterlife, I always say, I don't think there is an afterlife, but I hope I'm right and you're wrong, and there is. I don't believe it. yeah, when I was younger, I was still like, you know, I don't want to die and I want to live as long as possible. So I had all these fantasies in my head of like, oh, I want to have myself put in a freezer, you know, cryotherapy, and they can awaken me. They can wake me up a few hundred years later when they have the technology. But, you know, we are already with a lot of people, and I don't think, you know, that keeping even more people around, it would be a good part. But I have to say, I'm really interested in if there are possibilities, you know, for uploading a human brain inside of a computer, you know. So if maybe we can upload a human brain, then that would be something I'm interested in. Just, you know, I can live into a second life, or maybe, you know, I can reconnect with my 14-year-old self and be uploaded into a World of Warcraft character or something like that.
That's definitely an interesting perspective. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, yeah, but, yeah, I'm currently totally okay with, you know, with dying, and that's just the end of it. And that, I think that the knowledge of knowing you are going to die just also makes it the life we are currently living, you know, more important. Yeah. And also, if you are going to live, you know, for twice as long, and or you can live forever for as long as you don't get hit by a truck or don't drown, you know, like your organs, you just go to the doctor every 5 years to give you a shot and everything regenerates. If you know, if you live that kind of life, so yeah, I can live internally, but I don't have to take any risks, you know. So how is your life going to be? Are you going to, you know, step on an airplane or step into your car, or are you going to stay at home for the risk of not dying, you know? So, yeah.
So definitely gives like your life a meaning, since it can be over anytime. Otherwise, you also wouldn't pursue, I guess, the things you actually want to do. I feel also that's like an important part, that because we feel our life is like, or the death is so far away, that mm-hmm. we can have still so much time to do things someday or later, or that we actually want to do.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people these days aren't aware of that. You know, you heard us all the time. People, you know, come in a car accident and they start, you know, oh man, my life was almost over. And then they start to do the things they actually want to do, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, for me it wasn't, you know, my best friend died 3 years ago. So, and I was already doing the things I wanted to do, and I was already down the path, you know, I wanted to go. But it definitely made my feelings even stronger, you know, from it can be over anytime. And to focus on the things you're really important, you think are really important.
Yeah, but also I find
let me
your.
Just,
yeah.
Let me just. Sorry, I have to take this one.
Of course. Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, it's my girlfriend, and she already called two times. So.
Sure.
Yeah. If she calls two times, it's important. Hey. Ja, ik ben een podcast aan het opnemen. En je belt nu twee keer, dus ik had zoiets van, oh shit, straks is wat aan de hand. Mm-hmm. Ja, met Julian. Ja, die interviewt mij voor zijn podcast. Ja. Ja, ik lees van mijn appjes. Oké. Sorry, bye. Yeah, she was kind of worried because she messaged me multiple times.
And you didn't answer.
And I didn't answer because I was recording the podcast with you.
Oh, okay. So.
Yeah, I don't know why she didn't, message just one of my coworkers, but okay, yeah, it isn't a problem. So,
All good.
Thanks for, so I could take the call.
Of course.
Yeah, so yeah, I'm back in.
Good. So one question I still had was, because when I asked the question about what impact do you want to have, I was surprised about the ego-less answer of, yeah, I don't mind not being remembered, because that is usually a fear a lot of people have. Like, once I'm gone, then like I still want to continue to live in other people and like see that they are well off through the impact I made or something like that. Where did this come from?
Yeah, I don't know. I think that you should, yeah. You know, what's realistic, you know, when you look at the old Egyptians, you know, how many old Egyptians do you know? Yeah, you know, the pharaohs and the people, but all the common people, yeah, all the people, that lived there, they all died and, we don't know them. And I think, yeah, you can write a book right now and people remember it for a few years. But I think you have like one generation, two generation, three generations, and then that's also gone, you know? So, yeah, of course, I hope to, you know, bring positive change. And I hope I can be, you know, remembered by the people I brought change to, but I don't have the illusion that in a few generations, so that I will be remembered by maybe, evolved species or entirely different species or humans that are living then, you know? So if you intake, you know, the entire map from, you know, dinosaurs to human, we are currently right now, it's just a small blink, you know?
Yeah.
Just a very small part of the chain. So yeah, I'm just aware of that, and yeah, so on the large scale, I think, yeah.
Yeah, I do really like the perspective too. It really brings a different perspective in what we usually have in our minds, and like the super subjective perspective of I matter in my world, in my, I don't know, 20, 25 people close connection environment.
Yeah.
And if you broaden this, then you suddenly seem so small if you really see it in large scale objectively. Yeah, really interesting. And
how is this for you? Do you want to, what's your ambition? How do you want to be remembered?
Yeah, obviously, like, thought about this, otherwise I wouldn't have asked the question to you. I still find it super difficult to answer because of those reasons, because as I also learned, like, there are different perspectives a person can have. One is like, okay, I want to be remembered in my inner like circle right now of like good friends of this person who helped them in those areas, who was like compassionate towards those people and have like a good memory in especially those people. But to be honest, I would also like to have this on a bigger scale, that I can see I have had such a huge impact on a lot of people and helped them to have a bit more positive or a bit more a bit better lives. And that will make me personally really happy to see that. However, yep. When I then, again, as you say, see it on a larger perspective, this is just such a marginal change, which after, I don't know, 100 years, like, everybody has forgotten it and, like, nobody cares about it anymore. So that is, like, one part of, like, humans start forgetting about it. But on the, like, if you go even another step larger, the universe doesn't fucking care about anything we do at all.
No. Yeah. But it's really interesting. And I think what I get from what you're saying, I think it's also really important to focus on the change you can make now for people, you know, maybe not for the lasting change or the few generations, but let's just take, for example, you know, like Tony Robbins. He's changing a lot of lives through his seminars for a lot of people, and he is bringing a lot of change to people's lives in a positive way. But I don't think if we go three generations further, people would still like, you know, take up his book and like, oh, Tony Robbins, it's like the Bible or something like that, you know. I think even he will be forgotten, but he can, but that doesn't matter because he can make a lot of positive change to people that are living right now.
That's a really interesting perspective. Also in Connect, I'm not sure where I listened to that again, but it was that obviously there is nothing but the now, right now, and everything like what we see as future or also what we see as our past is just an illusion that doesn't exist. Yeah. There's no future. Yeah.
But also, you know, like if you want, you can change people's lives now, you can improve them now. But if you want to improve them in the future, yeah, isn't that like, you know, an ego thing for the most part?
I have to admit and agree. Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
I guess also.
Yeah,
I
also have to think about it a little longer, but and to brew on this. But I think, yeah, if you want to be remembered in 200 years, yeah, is that because, yeah, you don't want to be your life in vain, or is it because you want to, you know, have a positive impact on the people that live in 200 years? You don't know these people, you don't know what they do, but you know the people that are living right now, and you want to make a positive impact on.
Yeah, I mean, it is definitely ego thing. I would agree, but is it bad though?
I don't think it's. I don't think it's bad to. You don't have to, you know, don't think about yourself. You also have to think about yourself, because when you are happy and you are content, it brings you in a state that is easier, you know, to help other people and to also bring them joy to their lives. But I don't think, yeah, it's always a balanced thing, you know, from too much, too less. So I think it's also important to strive, you know, for balance. And also in that case, so of course, you should think about yourself, and you can put yourself first so that you can help other people and be at a good place yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But if you focus on that mainly and think, yeah, I want to be remembered in 200 years. Yeah. How much joy will that bring to your life now that you are currently living?
Oh, that is a fucking good question.
Yeah.
I'm definitely going to write this down.
Yeah.
To think about that. That's awesome. Yeah. That's something I really enjoy with those podcasts.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I think that could be an awesome ending. If a person would really like what you just said, where can they find you?
Yeah, I have a few business websites, like, you know, like the Off-Grid Centrum, and I have a blog website, but I'm working on a personal branding website now, right now, for just, you know, things like this, podcast interviews, etc. So I think it will be best if I'll email this before the launch of the podcast to you, and so you can just put it in the description, and people can go to my landing page and they can see, you know, the businesses I do, the things I talk about, and the way they even will find this podcast interview.
Yeah.
I'm sure. So I will definitely put it on the page as well. So we'll make a personal branding landing page.
Yeah, and I really want to acknowledge you for everything, like you just said about this, like how open you were about those things telling, and the positive and especially now, ego-less impact you want to have on the world. This is just really amazing. And thank you for that.
Yeah, also, I really enjoyed being on your podcast. I really enjoyed our conversation, even the pre-podcast conversation.
Yeah.
Really enjoyed that one too. So, and I hope we can stay in touch, you know, and maybe we can do another one in a year or two.
That would be cool to see like what changed. Yeah, and
How it changed our perspective. Really enjoyed it.
Oh, damn. Cool. Yeah, looking forward to the next one.
And also
one,
really looking forward to where you are going to be, you know, in a year. You're currently doing your master and really excited to see how your path will continue.
Thank you so much for that. Yeah, I'm also as curious as you. I don't know.
Much for listening to this episode with Nandar, and my personal takeaways from that are really the ego-less contribution in the now, what you can change with your being, with your appearance right now, and not waiting for the legacy in 100 years or what people will expect from you or will have from you later, but just act now. Thank you for everything, Nandar, and it was an amazing interview. I enjoyed it. One last thing, if you enjoyed this episode or got a new perspective on something, I would really appreciate if you subscribe or leave me a review on iTunes so I know what I'm doing and I can improve it. And I also see a bit of support from you to keep going. That would be awesome. So have a nice day and namaste.